Welcome to FYI, the four-year innovation podcast. This show offers an intellectual discussion on technologically enabled disruption, because investing in innovation starts with understanding it. To learn more, visit arc-invest.com.
ARK Invest is a registered investment advisor focused on investing in disruptive innovation. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK or podcast guests and are not endorsements or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Clients of ARK Investment Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Hi, welcome to FYI. My name is Lorenzo. I'm the Director of Research for the Digital Asset Team at ARK Invest. And today we're going to have a conversation with Cathy Wood and CZ. CZ is the founder of Binance, the biggest centralized exchange in crypto. And we're going to go through his early life in crypto, how he got into crypto and ended up founding Binance. And then we will go into where the industry is right now in terms of regulation and outlook, how Binance is doing, and also we will talk about quantum and what he thinks about the threat. Enjoy. This is For Your Innovation Podcast, and today we have a special guest. CZ, welcome to the podcast. We're super happy to have you today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So maybe, Cathy, we can start. CZ, I think if you could tell the audience like your early life story up until, you know, life after Binance, like in 5 to 7 minutes. I know it's going to be hard, but I think that would be very useful.
Yeah, sure. I was fascinated, CZ, to read your life story. It's very inspiring.
Well, thanks for reading that. Yeah. So I was born in a little village in China, and then I moved to a slightly bigger city called Hefei, and then I moved to Canada. So when I was 12, I did my teenager years in Canada, played a lot of volleyball, and then I did all right in the last 2 years that helped me to get into college. I went to McGill in Montreal. And then after graduation, I worked in Tokyo for a few years. And then I went to New York, working in Bloomberg for 4 years as a developer too. In Bloomberg, I moved from a developer to a team leader. I was managing a team of initially 60, and then grew to about 80 people in 4 years. And in 2005, I went back to Shanghai to do a fintech startup in Shanghai and did that for 8 years from 2005 to 2013. And in 2013, I discovered Bitcoin. So I was like, well, this thing's pretty interesting. I'm going to go all in on Bitcoin. So I quit. I left that startup and then tried a few different jobs in the crypto, in the Bitcoin industry. And then 2017, I said, well, now might be a good time to start a crypto-to-crypto exchange called Binance. So started Binance. I think we got lucky because 2017 was the ICO year, right? Everyone's doing an ICO. And then the existing exchanges, they were mainly Bitcoin exchanges. They didn't support all the ERC-20 tokens on Ethereum. So we were the new exchange. We did our own token, BNB. BNB started as an Ethereum ERC-20 token. So we obviously supported most other ERC-20 tokens as well. The exchange grew. We protected users really well. We provided good service. We had a fast matching engine. We're secure. And then in 5 months, we became the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange by trading volume. And then we has held that position ever since for the last, 8 years now. So, we went through like a couple cycles of crypto cycles, winters, et cetera. And then early 2022, 2023, we had to deal with a US DOJ issue, right? So there was an investigation. And then later on, the Binance and myself pleaded guilty to a single, BSA charge. Binance did something similar. a judge put me in jail for 4 months, went through that, paid $4 billion in fine. And then now came out. Luckily, Binance is still the largest cryptocurrency exchange. It didn't go down. Very lucky with that. And so now I'm basically just, now I just spend my time helping other founders doing investments through Easy Labs and then working on Giggle Academy. And also I still just 4 people on Twitter or on X. Yeah, I'm still in the industry. So yeah, that's kind of a short summary of the journey.
Yes, and the longer journey is in your recently published book, Freedom of Money. You just published it, I think, maybe 2 weeks ago, right?
7 days ago, actually.
Seven days ago. Yeah. Well, congratulations. And and there, for our listeners, you can read all about CZ's story from the very beginning. I mean, the whole thing is very inspiring. And it's also interesting, CZ, that you are spending your time, of course, still with crypto. It's still a passion of yours. But you have ventured into other areas, many of them overlapping with what ARK does in terms of, you know, the multi-omics world and robotics and so forth. So very happy to have you doing that, allocating capital in those areas, because they have been, certainly in the public markets, they've been inefficiently priced for a long time, and now we're seeing an explosion in opportunities, and we need investors like you to really, you know, partner with and bring these companies to life.
Absolutely, yes. I think, you know, shifting from a builder to like an investor, which is actually still a learning curve for me. I think you've been doing this for quite a while. So there's probably a lot of things I can learn from you.
Yeah, no, hey, we can brainstorm any day, CZ. So maybe we'll start with what's going on in crypto now.
Yeah, I mean, CZ, I think you've been in the industry for more than 10 years now. You're seeing, you know, now we're in 2026. What has moved slower and faster than you anticipated? I'm sure you had a lot of expectation when you started Binance. Be curious to know that.
Sure. I think there's a lot of things that are a little bit different from my what I would have predicted years ago, right? I would have thought payments would have taken off by now. It hasn't really. Like, most people don't use crypto for payments. Now there's a crypto cards people use. No, the merchants doesn't know it's a crypto card. It's like a Visa or MasterCard. And then users can pay in crypto. Also unexpected was the fast institutional participation in crypto over the last year, especially in the US. I mean, a year and a half ago, I think US was relatively anti-crypto, right? There was a war on crypto declared by Senator Elizabeth Warren. I was put in jail under the Biden administration. I was very surprised by the 180-degree turn in the U.S. I think this speaks to the strength of the Constitution, right? So you can change presidents every 4 years, and then even if there's a period where there's a suppressive regime, you can change pretty quickly. I think also because of the suppressive regime or for the past administration, there's not a whole lot of strong innovation in the crypto industry in the last cycle. Right. So in the last 4 years, in the last administration, all the builders, a dozen large crypto projects got sued by the US SEC. Right. So people moved into meme coins, and there's not a whole lot of actual utility apps that's being built. I think right now we're kind of seeing a little bit of a, I would say not a vacuum, but much less than what I would have expected for applications for people to build. So hopefully now with the US having pro crypto regulations, we will see more of that being built. So there's quite a number of things that I see that are different from my expectations. But over time, I think the industry will catch up. It will fill in the gaps, and then it will continue to grow.
I think one thing that has surprised us, certainly relative to our first paper on Bitcoin in 2014, was the rise of stablecoins, and now we're seeing, with AI, the rage, we're seeing this agentic AI, a stablecoin movement. Do you think that AI is going to be a big spur to a renewal of the innovation?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think AI will help on multiple fronts. Number one is AI agents are going to transact 10, 100, 1,000 times more transactions than humans can do. Right, so an AI is going to use crypto. They're not going to use Swift or Visa cards, or they may use some parts of the traditional financial system. But if you're going to interact with a person on the opposite end of the world from you, in a different country, crypto is so much easier. So I think that's definitely going to happen. Also, I think AI is going to improve the speed of development, right? AI writing code can assist dramatically in the speed of writing code. You cannot do everything completely yet. Maybe soon you will, but AI will build, will allow us to build applications much faster. So I think that's also another another area AI will contribute quite a lot. So that will allow us to build new applications, but easier to use wallets, more safer wallets, etc., faster blockchains. So I think that will also speed up the development. So I think, as you said, stablecoin was also a thing I didn't expect to be this big.
Yes.
So back in 2014, when Tether started, like even in 2017, when we supported Tether, we were like, oh, this is a stopgap solution for people to like, you know, hold fiat pegged value for a short period of time when there's a down, when there's a down market. But somehow it grew bigger than what I would have expected. And some of the other things that are interesting is I didn't expect gold to be that actively traded on a crypto exchange, right? So right now, I think Binance only listed gold like, what, 2 months ago? Now it's like, now Binance is the largest gold trading venue outside of the traditional markets. And gold is also like 10% of their futures trading volume, which is like, you know, crazy, right? And then they just listed oil. So now we're seeing the merging of traditional assets on crypto exchanges. When people first started talking about tokenizing stocks and stuff like that, I didn't expect that to be that big. I was like, I'm not sure if this thing works or not. But now they're getting big. So a lot of interesting things are happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And why do you think they're getting so big? Do you think Larry Fink saying probably 2 or 3 years ago that everything would be tokenized gave the traditional financial world the idea to really go for it, even before we had a crypto-friendly regime in Washington?
Yeah, so I think Larry definitely has his pull, especially in the traditional markets. And he also has pull with global world leaders, right? When Larry, when BlackRock says, when the CEO of BlackRock says, this and that, is viewed number one by country leaders around the world, by other financial institutions and traditional institutional capital as well. So I think he definitely had that pull. Also, he had the foresight that everything will be tokenized and there's enough volume, right? To be very frank, even though I worked in traditional finance before, but I don't really understand the industry at the level that Larry understands in terms of money markets. I was a tech guy, right? So I think him understanding it and also him supporting it both really helps. And I think, and also now we're seeing the convergence of the two, what we call the Wall Street or traditional finance versus the crypto industry. It should just be one industry. It should just be one industry using either old or new technologies to facilitate trade, to facilitate access, right? So what I didn't expect is because, Binance have 320 million users now. Those users actually do want, and also as I mentioned before, right? So there's actually a little bit of a lack of good assets in crypto today, right? So in the last 4 years, there hasn't been a lot of strong projects. So you can trade memes, you can trade meme coins all you want, but that's one category. Right now, when the tokenized assets become available to crypto investors worldwide, even gold, people trade it. And also because of the geopolitical tension, right? So there's a lot of volatility. I think oil is going to see that as well. So I think it's just a timing and also the Larry Fink bringing the traditional industry into this crypto area. All of that helps.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Our experience with Bitcoin, especially, Larry Fink was dead set against it when we put out our first white paper in 2050. And Jamie Dimon.
Everyone.
Yes, everyone. So it was one of the reasons I think we developed such visibility out there in the social world broadly, because crypto conversations were taking place in the social world. So it's been serendipitous for us. And we're delighted to have the traditional financial players joining the momentum. And I'd like to just ask you on that. Do you think that the traditional financial world and players are embracing crypto today because they think it's going to lower their costs and take out a lot of friction in the system, a friction which actually benefits them from a profitability point of view? Or do you think they're embracing it because they see how much more, how much financial activity will be stimulated by this technology?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. That's a very good question. Very good point. I think they definitely see the potential because if you look at the trading volumes on Binance.com or other crypto exchanges, etc., and on chain, the amount of volumes that's going through there, people see the business potential, so they have to catch on to that. The flip side is also that this new technology will lower the fees and lower the costs, so you will lower their profits in the short term, but it will also increase their volume. Right. So ideally, you want to lower the fees so that you have if you lower the fees by 50%, you want to have 2x or 5x or 10x volume. So I think also with this technology, the fees will become lower. So even if one player doesn't lower their fees, the other players will. And the player who doesn't lower their fees will lose market share. So you can keep your high fees, but then you won't have any business. So I think they are recognizing that. And that's going to be another factor that they actually have to be a race to adopt this new technology, which lowers their costs, which means that they can charge their clients much less. So they will get more clients.
Yes. And very often when we move into a technologically enabled period of disruption, what we see is the traditional world typically fights it. It does seem that the financial world is embracing it, perhaps because, as you say, if they don't, they're going to lose a lot of share. But typically, pure plays are more often the winners because they're not encumbered by two ecosystems, the TradFi in this case and DeFi. How do you think that will play out?
Yeah. So I think that's a very delicate balancing point, right? So some CEOs of large, say, existing traditional financial companies, they may view that they will be there for 2 years. So 2 years later, whatever happens with that company is no longer their problem. They just want to get their bonus this year and next year, right? Guys with those kind of mindsets, they will not change. They just want to hold the status quo. They just want to earn out their job. But the next CEO may say, well, I'm here for another 5 years or 10 years. Maybe I will care. I want the company to have a slightly long-term view. Also, public companies typically have a shorter term window, every 4 months or every 3 months, every quarter, they need to have a quarterly earnings report. So there's always a balance between the sort of short-term thinking versus long-term thinking. But the short-term thinking companies, over the long term, they will suffer if they don't adopt a long-term strategy. There's always that balance. And then, as you said, new companies that are like native crypto companies, they don't have that baggage. They're just not, we're new business. They're going to use the new, approach. Private companies typically are able to have a much longer term view than public companies. So, this actually works against the public companies. They're forced to have a 3 month view. So all of this will play out. But longer term, though, the trend will continue. Whoever adopts a better technology that saves costs and that improves the efficiency will win. Whoever don't will be negatively impacted. So even, like, let's say a CEO of a large traditional financial company, even for the next 2 years, they don't change. But 2 years later, they will lose significant business that they will have to change. So at a certain point, you're holding on to old things may not work anymore, and then you have to change. You have to embrace the new stuff. So I think So overall, it will happen. Yeah.
Even more so because blockchain technology and AI are converging very rapidly, and AI is moving so much more quickly than any other technology that we've ever witnessed before, that this idea of if you don't get with the program, you're going to lose, it's going to happen in a shorter period of time than it has historically, right?
Absolutely. The rate of change is increasing and the response time is shortening. So you can't, even though this CEO may think he has 2 years, he might get fired in a year if he doesn't use AI, doesn't use blockchain. So we'll see. Yeah. So, and also it's, especially now with Larry Fink, with Jamie Dimon, they're all embracing this now. So I think there's a real shift in the mentality now. There was a point where during the internet days where if a CIO of a financial firm doesn't consider cloud, they will be fired. Right? Today, if your CTO does not consider AI, they will be fired. Soon, if you don't consider blockchain, you will also be fired. So I think we'll get to that point pretty quickly.
So, yes, this is where short-term thinking actually might help because this is happening so quickly.
I I think not a lot has been said, CZ, about just the Binance story. I want to know, like, how were you able to keep the number one spot, like, for so many years, right? Like, we, with Kathy and, like, ARK Invest, like, we're invested in a lot of crypto businesses. Is this something cultural, structural at Binance? Like, there are so many competitors out there with a lot of resources. So, yeah.
I think there's a couple of different things. I think the number one thing is we've always wanted to protect users above everything else, above our revenues, above our profits. So whenever something happens, you know, we protect the users. So I think users know that. Number two is we got lucky in a few situations where we have a much more global footprint. And the regulatory uncertainty was like, you know, was quite significant over the last 10 years. And so you see other players typically have a home country. So they're kind of stuck in that country. If that country is pro crypto, they do well. If that country is against crypto, they do less well. So whereas Binance has always said, okay, some countries will be against crypto and then we're just going to leave. Some countries will be pro crypto, then we're going to do more in those areas. Luckily, Binance takes a small number of users from every country that are pro crypto, and added up is a large number. And given that large number, then we will have the best liquidity. When you have the best liquidity, your users go to you because they get better prices, right? It's cheaper for them to trade, and then that have a network effect. And also, so far we've been able to keep our costs really low. We have a few offices now, small offices, but we don't have a grand office, you know, super expensive building, etc. We mostly work from home. That kept us costs low. And I really want Binance to be a startup kind of feel company. It's still a large team now. It's no longer a startup, but I really want it to be. So we kind of held on to that for a very long time. And so the cost base is low. So there's a combination of things. And also in the crypto industry, there's trust, right? Especially with centralized exchanges. So we've been number one for a long time and we have large volumes. We've been very secure. So that builds the trust. So I think compared to some of the US players, are just too costly. The fees are too high. They're too expensive. The US users have no choice but to use those platforms. It's kind of a monopoly in its own market. But I think US should open up to global competition. The price will come down. The consumers will have more choice. This will also increase the crypto penetration in the US, which will benefit the current US players, right? This may be counterintuitive, where I think in the book Innovation Stack, the author explained very, very well that when IKEA enters a market, the other furniture shops actually increase in business because more people kind of buy furnitures. So that's a different topic.
No, super, super interesting. Yeah. How do you see the future of exchanges, like crypto exchanges like Binance, Coinbase? We've talked about other asset classes coming on chain, equities, venture capital and other asset classes. Do you think we hear a lot of the everything exchange, Coinbase, that you're going to trade every asset class on Coinbase? We now have new exchanges like Kalshi and Polymarket. How do you see that going forward?
Okay, I think there's a few different ways the industry could evolve. I think everyone wants to be the everything exchange. That's kind of normal. I do think that will happen to a large extent. Every guy wants to be everything exchange. Binance trades Binance trades oil and gold now, which I didn't see like even a year ago. I think Coinbase most likely will do the same thing, and then other exchanges will do the same thing. And then I think Binance just integrated with prediction markets recently as well. I believe other exchanges will do similar things. And some exchanges may even launch their own prediction markets if they have the proper licenses, etc. So I think all of those with the new technology, one platform can cut out the middle players. You don't need that many different platforms, right? So this natural degree of consolidation, and what we don't like the term, but it's called centralization, right? So it's network effect. At the same time, I think there is also geographic differences, and there's also user differences. When the average, what we call a normal, typical person comes into, like a non-techie person comes into crypto, they may prefer to use a centralized exchange instead of a decentralized one. But once they get more and more advanced, and also once the tools for a normal person, a non-tech person, to be able to use a self-custody wallet becomes easier and safer, they may shift towards a decentralized exchange, right? So depending on which wave this goes faster, if 10, 20% of the global population is suddenly moving into crypto, the centralized exchanges will grow bigger very quickly. And then the decentralized exchanges will stay there for a little while. But if people slowly drip in and more people drift to the decentralized exchanges, then we may see the decentralized exchanges grow faster than the centralized exchanges. Today, to use a decentralized exchange, you still have to deal with wallets, addresses. It's still a bit clunky. There's more numbers and there's more random numbers on the screen that you need to deal with, right? So most non-techie guys don't want to deal with that. So it's hard to say which way it's going to go. I think U.S. right now, with the SEC saying that, you know, DEX UIs are, you know, this announcement a couple of days ago, with all of those positive encouragements from the regulatory stance, I think U.S. is really going to open up. I think U.S. is probably going to, and also the CFTC seems to be pretty supportive, very supportive of traditional markets. So I think that sector will grow pretty quickly. So it's important for exchanges to see how to integrate with that or just launch a prediction market, et cetera. So I think all of those things are happening. So U.S. will have U.S. currently have a regulatory policy advantage. This is completely different from a year and a half ago. So what we may see exchanges in one region grow faster than the other regions of the world based on favorable regulations. So it's hard to say, but we want for Binance, I encourage them to keep an open mind and just for everywhere that's open. Yeah. And I think Coinbase now has a pretty good chance. I mean, you guys are investors in Coinbase. So I think Coinbase, they've done a phenomenal job for the last, 14 years or 15 years. So, and they weathered all the regulatory issues in the US as well. So I think multiple exchanges will continue to exist for a very long time. Yeah.
In terms of regulatory and the US, we're still waiting for some more clarification, especially around rewards and, basically sharing yield, I guess is another way of saying it. How are you thinking about that? I know that you and Tether have, or that Binance and Tether have had a very strong relationship for years. And we know that Tether is unlikely, at least in the short term, to share rewards. I think Circle is beginning to gain share. How do you see that working out?
Sure. Well, there's one minor correction. So we actually have Binance have zero relationship with Tether. Binance listed Tether in early days. It helped Tether grow, but Tether is also quite important to help the industry grow. So there's no business relationship. There's no equity. There's nothing, actually. There's no revenue share. There's no even there's not even a commercial contract.
Okay. Maybe it's just you both were there so early working together, supporting each other. That's, there's a perception of closeness.
Yeah. So I personally think that stablecoins should generate interest for the users. And I also agree with you. I don't think Tether is going to do that anytime soon. They've achieved dominant position without doing that because they were the early mover. But they're also leaving room for competition now because, other newer stablecoins are offering yields. And you can do it in different ways, right? I think right now, it doesn't make sense to say, look, you cannot give your users benefits. Right. So that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You can say, okay, you cannot offer interest rate. But people will find other ways, right? I think there were discussions about, okay, no interest rate, but what about activity-based rewards? Right. If people do something, you're going to give, it's easy for people to do something, right? You can put in a different type of account, a different activity, a different staking, a different, there's so many different ways to give people money. If you're a business that want to reward your users, there's so many different ways of doing it. I think it just goes counter against a sort of, I don't know how you can limit that completely, right? So you can say, look, if a business wants to offer zero fee trading, they should be allowed to, right? So I think it's but at the same time, I do recognize that, you know, we want to integrate with traditional financial systems. We don't want to completely destroy them or disrupt them. So we got to give them time to react. So that part I understand. But I do think very soon, in the U.S. or outside of the U.S., there will be stable coins that offer good returns for the users, that are also easy to trade, that will win, right? So, so I think right now Tether has a dominant position, but no, USDC is not small. USD1 is growing pretty quickly. We are seeing other stable coins outside of the U.S. Growing pretty quickly as well. So I think the stable coin area is not, it's a big part, but it's only one part of crypto. And I think any business that takes care of their users more than others, they will win. Either low fees or you give them rewards or any business that gives users better returns, that's a pretty big advantage. So I do think that there will be heavy competition. If the US doesn't allow it, the international stable coins may win in the short term.
That's interesting.
We've chatted about this, like the you know, this fear of bank run from like deposits in traditional institutions to stable coins. Like, if we allow the rewards to be distributed to users, do you think that's a fair assessment or not really? Like, it's more, you know, kind of fear mongery from bank CEOs.
Well, I think there's some validity to it. I think, well, there's one thing is, which is you hold the assets in one place and it's relatively safe, but it just generates interest, like, you know, from U.S. treasuries or from country, from government bonds, etc. That's one way. But then once you go into the interest rate route, then people are going to be offer higher interest rate. The way to offer high interest rate is put the assets into higher risk investments, right? But compared to banks, banks are fractional reserves. Banks give like 99% of the money away to invest in other places, and they may or may not be able to get that money back in time, right? So that's why bank runs are very scary for banks. So far, cryptocurrency exchanges and even stablecoin issuers so far have mostly in crypto has mostly held one-to-one reserves, and they're audited, some of the top ones, right? So they're audited, etc. So I think, my personal view is we should not break that for crypto. I think that's a good thing to have in crypto that doesn't exist in traditional financial industries. Crypto exchanges, stablecoin issuers should maintain one-to-one peg. It should maintain 100% reserve. But there are ways to generate yield even when you do that, right? So, and then for those yield that we generate, I actually encourage companies to pass that to their users. But if the law says, no, you can't do that, that's just law. Then you don't do that in that country. So for stablecoins issued in other countries, then they will do that. And then most likely more and more people globally, unless they're prevented from accessing that stablecoin, they will use those stablecoins will grow. So I do think that, you know, fundamentally users look at rewards, economic benefit, ease of use and security, right? Those are really just the few things that they look at.
Yes, and do you think? I mean, there is a debate. There's a big network effect when it comes to stablecoins and the crypto ecosystem, which would suggest that there will be only a few big stablecoin winners, but many people, and I think you just said. Certainly in this early days, we're going to see many stable coins issued. We see one almost every day. Where do you think this will shake out? Winner takes most or not?
Eventually, it might be winner take most, but at the same time, I think in the short term, we'll see a lot more competition than consolidation. Because historically, we have had consolidation. Because historically, it's quite difficult to do a stable coin, before the Trump administration, right? So governments all around the world are pretty hostile to crypto. And for years, Tether did not reveal their bank account, right? Whenever they reveal their bank account, that bank account gets shut down. So Tether somehow was able to maintain a bank account with a large number of assets in there while the US government's trying to shut them down. Right, so that's like a real hard skill.
Yes.
That's really hard to do. I don't, till this day, I don't know how they manage that. And somehow they were able to manage that, and most other people cannot. So that's why, you know, they're large. But now I believe that that barrier is gone. That moat, that problem is not existent now. Now anyone can issue a stable coin. No, you can get a bank account. You can get a bank to support you. You can get audited. It's one-to-one backed. So now the barrier to issue a stable coin is much, much lower. But the trick about adoption is, like, how do you get your stable coin to be adopted, everyone using it? Well, that's a marketing adopting growth challenge, which many businesses will be able to overcome. And especially if they can offer better incentives than Tether, then I think, you know, that's why I think in the short term, we will see many different stable coins. And also, we're just only talking about US dollar-based stable coins, right? Many other countries will want to issue their own currency-backed stable coins. Because right now, the US dollar stable coins increases the US dollar dominance globally. Many other countries want to slightly increase their own currencies, you know, China being one, other countries. Every country wants to see their currency being used by the world to the extent possible. Also, US dollar stable coins typically use US treasuries. So this is an indirect way to sell US bonds to the global crypto population. So most other countries will want to do the same thing too. Every country wants to sell the government bonds, right? So I know many countries who actually talk to me saying, look, they want to raise more money, right? So they want to have more investments into the country. Selling bonds through stable coins is one of those indirect ways, but a very effective ways to do so. So I think in the short term, we will see a lot more stable coins. Whether long term is going to be one winner take all, depends. There are network effects, so possibly, but then the barriers for stable coins is not high. So I think many people keep trying.
Why do you think we haven't seen local, you know, non-USD denominated stable coins? Like, we have the Euro stable coin that is, you know, tiny. We had a Mexican peso stable coin. Is it because structurally, like, the on-off ramps are not just, you know, as efficient as with USDT or USDC, or just users, they don't want the local currency maybe, and they want access to dollars?
Based on my limited understanding, I believe the main reason was it's too expensive to do. So my understanding of the Euro stablecoins, the Euro, I'm not an expert in this, but this is just what I heard anecdotally from other stablecoin projects. It's quite expensive to do the Euro stablecoin. They require a very large insurance policy. They require a very large capital allocation. It's just very expensive to do. So it's just very difficult for a startup to do it. And then basically you have to commit hundreds of millions of dollars up front to be able to do a EUR stablecoin. And then the market is not quite there yet. So because it's non-existent, most people are very comfortable trading in US dollar based stablecoins. So it's a chicken and egg problem. In Mexico, it might be a banking access issue. In different countries, the issue is a little bit different, I think. Many people try to do a RMB, like Chinese RMB stablecoin. But again, banking support there is tricky. Hong Kong just issued two stablecoin licenses to HSBC and Standard Chartered Bank. So we'll see how that does. But banks typically move very cautiously and very slowly. So they may not be as crypto native as some of the crypto native stablecoins, right? So so far, the others have not taken off. So now this actually gives the US dollar a huge advantage. But others are trying to catch up. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah.
CZ, you've had some very interesting takes on quantum. I know you've seen the papers, the quantum thread and Bitcoin. I mean, obviously, you know, we all work in the crypto industry, but Binance is a huge holder of many of these cryptos. What do you think the timeline is there? And are we, too worried, like not enough?
Number one, I'm not an expert in this area. So I know just about as much as anybody who's reading the news. But I do think that I did talk to some people very recently, some like young tech people who are more familiar with the situation. My gut feeling is this. My gut feeling is cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin will upgrade properly, right? What we do with the Satoshi coins is we'll figure it out. I think we'll give them a year, 2 years to move it. If it doesn't, but hopefully before somebody cracks the address, we will freeze it or we'll burn it or however we will do. I think that is probably more of a philosophical community vote thing. People don't especially with Bitcoin maxis. They don't want the centralization, but if there's a community vote, we can probably figure it out. And I also think there's an element of advertising in Google's claims, right? So look, if you're researching this thing, what's the saying? People are usually more optimistic about what they can achieve in 1 year and underestimate what they can achieve in 10 years. So, I mean, if you're a company, if you're a team working on quantum computing right now, I mean, I'm sure they're making very good progress, but their forecast 2029, right? So those forecasts are typically a bit optimistic, right? I mean, we've been in IT for a while. We're typically, when you hear a completion date, you go, you pat it for a bit. It's good marketing. It's also good awareness for the industry to sort of react to it and move on. And address it, right? So I do think we need to address it. So I'm not too worried about it. I think more computing power is always good. And there's already like quantum proof encryption algorithms. So we just have to move to those. I don't think it's not a problem without a solution. But you just need coordination. So I don't know who's going to coordinate it. Some core Bitcoin devs will coordinate that. Most likely though, a bunch of other blockchains may upgrade first. Some of the other blockchains who has much more what we call centralization, right? Vitalik can propose something for Ethereum. Some people will adopt it. Justin Sun just proposed something for Tron yesterday. He posted it yesterday. BNB, we can look at BNB and how to improve that. And maybe some of the other protocols will go first and then we'll deal with Bitcoin.
Yeah. As we always say, half of the solution is understanding the problem. And it seems like we understand the problem, if there is one, and we agree with you in terms of timeline. Before we go, just wanted to get your take on where you think Bitcoin is now. Is this the four-year cycle and we're cycling through and getting ready for another run? And just wanted to also clarify something that I said vis-a-vis Binance on one of the news shows. Around the time of the flash crash on 1010, we know there was a software glitch, but Binance did not trigger the flash crash. I want to make sure everyone understands that we know Binance did not. There was a lot of tariff turmoil once again, and the markets were very jumpy. It may have exacerbated it, but we think we're through the ramifications of that. Do you think that Bitcoin will see new highs? Are you still bullish Bitcoin?
Sure. No. Number one is I appreciate you for saying that. I'm not sure if you even know that that line you said was quoted very heavily in Chinese media.
Oh my gosh! Right?
Your picture was all over the Chinese media, and then people were complaining about Binance caused the October 10 crash, etc. And they used that little video clip. So I'm really glad you said that now, and clarified that.
And I didn't even know that.
That's what I figured. I think, look, you do a podcast. Now people say things and then they get taken out of context, right? You do a podcast. You can't explain all the disclaimers, et cetera. And then, but people use your clip, very, very heavily, especially in the Chinese communities, but it's okay. I think we're past that. I think there's still two forces happening right now. I don't know which one's going to win first. So we've seen Bitcoin drop a bit into 2026, right? That will follow the four-year cycle, right? So 2022 was a bear year. Now 2021 was a bull year. So 2025 was a bull year. 2026, we've seen a drop. But there's two other things that are very positive for crypto. One is President Trump is going to, he views the stock market as his benchmark, right? He's going to do everything in his power to improve the stock market. When the stock market does well, crypto will do well. When stock markets do well, people have free cash. People have more money. They have more free cash and they'll diversify into crypto. And so when markets go well, they go well together. And also with the geopolitical tension, there's actually people realize late, right? So gold did well. And then now gold kind of is going up and down a bit. It's highly volatile, but gold is very active. Bitcoin should be very active, right? So we've seen Bitcoin drop, but now in the last couple of days, Bitcoin's coming back up to 75, 74, 75-ish. So I think the stock market doing well will be very positive for Bitcoin and for crypto in general. So I think that force will probably come very strong before the midterm. Because, you know, before the midterm, Trump's going to do everything he can. Like, that would be logical to me, right? I don't know him. Well, I've never spoken to him. But the U.S. market has a lot of influence on other markets, in crypto, global markets, etc. So I'm still very hopeful that this year might turn out different. This recovery might be slightly faster than the historic bear market recoveries. And also Bitcoin already hit 60,000 something, right? So that's kind of the support from the last all-time high. So I think I'm hoping that the worst part is over, but this is not financial advice.
No, we have to say that all the time as well. But I do think what is supporting it is in the TradFi world, institutional support, because institutions have been hearing about this 4-year cycle thing and trying to learn it and understand it. So heck, they waited for a correction like this. And so now they are starting to move in, it seems to us, based on our flows. They're starting to move in more now than they have been in the last couple of years.
Yeah. And you're very correct about the institutions. Most institutions, once they hold, the institutions make decisions much slower. So they have committees, you know, that make decisions together, right? And when they get in, they don't get out within a month, right? It takes them like a month to buy like $1 billion, and they're not going to get out in a month. They will hold for multiple years. So most institutions are long-term holders. With them coming into the ETFs, that's really going to stabilize the price and hopefully cause it to increase. I'm very optimistic. So as always.
Yes. Yeah. And we share your optimism. And we're very grateful that you agreed to do this FYI with us. I think this is going to be one of our best.
I'm very, very happy to be here. And also, thank you for inviting me. And also, we would love to do more investments in the US, and we look for your support as well.
Oh, super.
Of course.
Yes.
Was a pleasure having you. CZ, where can people find your new book, Freedom of Money?
Amazon works really well.
Perfect.
Self-published directly on Amazon.
All right.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much, CZ.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye now.
Yeah. ARK believes that the information presented is accurate and was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information, and such information may be subject to change without notice from ARK. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this podcast may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements.